welcome councillors, staff and the media, and we'll here open this council meeting for, what is the date?
1st
of November, says Pete. Rabbits, says Sam. At a regional council meeting. We have no apologies, but we note the leave of absence of Deacon, but
I was pissed off this morning.
Right, page. We do have a request for leave of absence from Councillor Laws. I'm happy to move that we accept that. Deacon and Councillor Hope, I'll put it all in favour. Please say aye.
Aye.
Again, carried. Thank you. Confirm the agenda as circulated. Are there any conflicts of interest anybody wishes to identify today? It appears not. No matters of public forum. We'll go on to confirming the minutes of the 27th of September council meeting. And they are on your agenda. You just need to flick down a couple of pages and they are there. Below the action sheet. Everybody comfortable that they're a true and accurate record?
So
thank you, Councillor Kenton. Second, Councillor Hope. Any discussion? I'll put it all in favour. Please say aye.
Aye.
And carried. Thank you. All right, so if you just duck back up one page to the actions, and an action there with respect to school bus service withdrawal, and you'll see, and as we were well aware, that those negotiations have occurred and that action's closed. So we'll move straight on to item 1 on the agenda, or item 10, which is the chairperson's report. Page 14, bingo. So a couple of items to note. You'll see that we've got a further feedback period coming up with respect to the Remuneration Authority. We've talked about that a number of times, Mr. Dolly, and there was quite a bit of discussion from resulting from the presentation at the Zone 5 and 6 meeting by Fran Wild, Dame Fran, and you'll see the criteria they are using there, recommending they're going to use for setting salaries, but they're going proposing to go back to a situation where they will give council a pull and council will have to decide how to allocate it, which a few with a bit of memory in local government were a bit concerned about, because it's going back to where they were years ago, and the reason they've got the current system is that there were some councils that couldn't make a decision, got themselves tied in knots. So anyway, they're wanting a feedback, Mr. Donnelly, by Christmas, I think. Is that correct?
Yeah, my understanding is that extended the time for the previous submission, but as a council, we actually provided the feedback on those questions that were in the second lot with the first, set of questions anyway.
Right.
So we'd already completed that and circulated that. So whether or not anybody wants to have another look at that and resubmit it, but I'd view that we'd closed that one out.
We'd closed that one out, yeah, right. Were we aware of their proposal at that point with respect to the allocation of a pool when the council sorted out?
No, that doesn't sound like what was in their,
no,
in their submission. They were talking about they were sort of talking about other mechanisms for setting up.
Righto. I might flick you the paper from the Dane gave us on the day, and we might have another look at that. All right, you'll see that Kai Tahu Kia Tago, or KDAKO as we know them, celebrated their 20th anniversary. There was 40 or 50 people at Toitū on Friday night. And I spoke, a great honour to speak, was the only person to speak other than Runanga Chairs, two Runanga Chairs, which is three of us. And Regional Council had a significant part to play in the development and establishment of KDKO, and clearly that relationship's evolved as we moved into Te Rupatao in the last 6 years. So that was recognised. And they actually have taken advantage of the anniversary to have a look at the future of the organisation, and it's been rebranded, and it's now OKAHA, and not KTKO, which is just an acronym. And OKAHA originates from Kia Kaha, which is about our kaha is unite and bind together, and it's based on two men engaging in lashing on a waka. One would say kia kaha as they threaded, though it was explained on the night, as they threaded the lashings, one would say kia kaha, so he pushed the line through and then both pulled together, and the other one would say a kaha, or o kaha. So it's about encourage people to unite and work together. So there's quite a bit of brandy, and then with a water bottle and a small flex basket. And
the water bottle looks a bit ominous, Mr. Chair.
What does that look?
Yeah, I reckon.
So there'll be some formal communication, I'd imagine, with council. But well done, and they're certainly looking towards the future in the next 20 years. And in congratulating them on the previous 20 years, said that we haven't reached the end game and we need to keep our eyes open and for future opportunities, and the relationship will continue to evolve. The late snow session is there for your information. I'm sure it will flow through committee reports also. Significant effort last week in Queenstown with the public transport, and Ms Sutton and Mr Collins and staff were there, Ms Ross, and it went pretty well. Councillor Lawton, you were at a number of the meetings, and and we're all on target for a launch on November the 20th. The other one I wanted to bring your attention to, and it's going to pop up, and some farmers very unhappy with the issue they perceive in the Hawea Flat area with respect to groundwater levels and bore levels. And Councillor Lawton and I were at that initial meeting, and they're endeavouring to relate the bore levels with the lake level, and there is some correlation for some bores, but there's also been a very dry patch, and it's more than just bores that are directly linked with the lake levels that are affected. And there's a further meeting coming up, and hopefully Dr. Palmer, you're able to attend and assist with me at the AGM of the Hawea Irrigation Company. But and we do have a study going on in that area looking at groundwater levels and taking the opportunity to test groundwater quality at the same time, Dr. Palmer. And the outputs from that will be used to inform a plan change around the allocation levels of the aquifers up there.
Can I ask a question about that?
Yes.
Well, when's that report going to be coming to the council at the start?
Dr. Palmer.
Mr. Chairman, it won't be in the current financial year. I'll need to check the date because we have some monitoring work to be done before the modelling takes place, and then there's some analysis and decisions. So it's a multi-year program.
Yeah. Yeah, and the work is going to gather information to allow staff to develop a model.
That's correct.
Correct, yeah. Sorry, I missed that bit out.
Can I just comment on that? And also just want to make sure that I'm sure you understand that this isn't just a farmer issue.
No.
The Hawea residents are pretty toey about this issue.
Hawea Flat.
Yeah,
domestic.
But in general, with the late levels and the way in which that late is being managed, there is also a great deal of concern.
Right.
From the wider Kiwi community.
Well, Contact are operating the lake within their consent conditions.
I understand that.
Yeah. Yep.
But I'd hate to think it was just. Yeah. That's the worry that with me is the timeline. Do we need to contract this out to get a quicker timeline? Is the reason that it's taking so long because we don't have the funding on the staff, or is the reason because it's so long it takes?
Dr. Palmer, can
you just... The reason is that measurements need to be made over time, groundwater levels and other sorts of things that then inform the construction of the model. But I will ask staff what can be done to bring the report forward if that's practical and possible before we attend the meeting next week.
Thank you. Yep. That'd be good. All right, any other questions around my chairperson's report?
Can I also just include, when there was an email sent around about the upcoming minimum flows for the Clutha Mata Ao and Hawea, I did raise that this is going to raise this issue again, and we will be hearing from that community specifically on that issue. I just think we need to front foot it, would be valuable rather than waiting to hear from them.
Need to be prepared from...
Do you mean on late levels?
Yep, Lake Levels and what rivers, specifically for that part of the world,
Through you, Chair, so we have a presentation from our staff later today about that particular plan change, and we'll be asking the feedback around the consultation and who we actually engage with.
Great.
Everybody else comfortable? Yep. All right, I'll come back to item 6 after the Chief Executive's report. Mr. Baedeker, Chief Executive's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Councillors, I've noted what I believe are some significant achievements during the 5 years that I've been your Chief Executive. I'm confident that I lead the organisation in a different, and I would consider far better state than the one I found. We have demonstrated that we can engage with our community in a different way, and I look at successes around the work we've done with Catherine Sotago in working together with the academic part of our community. I look at the work that we've done around the Environmental Enhancement Fund with small groups of people and large activities, one of which will have reported to us this afternoon. And I had immense pleasure in having a cup of tea with a couple of people who we'd provided a very small amount of funding to buy gardening equipment, gardening gloves, which in any other account people may have said, well, what a waste of time and energy. They were absolutely delighted with what we'd done as an organisation. It meant that they could continue their work if we controlled on a little island that I didn't even know existed at the time. And that's the way that we are now becoming perceived as an organisation in our community. Yep, we don't always get it right, and there are plenty of people that think that we've done it wrong, but there are an awful lot more people think we're actually of relevance and of value in the community than was the case 5 years ago. I also look at the relationship that we've had with our territorial authorities. Mayor rang me recently and said that when I arrived, the relationship with his territorial authority was at best described as toxic, and that's now not the case. And I take a lot of personal pride in the fact that I've worked really hard with chief executives, and we have evidenced that relationship by the fact that we have got Moonness and Management Otago, where 5 territorial authorities gave up their personal responsibility for civil defence to this organisation so that collectively we could have a better organisation than the 6 separate entities that we had. Mr Chairman, your staff are in a really good frame of mind. We've worked hard to allow them to be engaged. We've worked hard to improve the business processes around the way that we set the objectives for the work that we do, and how we report it to you. We've done a significant piece of work around organisational culture called Gearing Up. It will be up to you and your new Chief Executive as to whether that piece of work gains the traction that I believe it needs to and the traction that I supported in the role that I'm just about to relinquish. I have got a tremendous team of senior executives. The team of directors that we have, including Civil Defence, is the envy of most other regional councils, and they are ready to deliver the work that needs to be done for the council. So I believe, Mr Chairman, as I leave, that I've made significant gains. There's an opportunity for you as a council to enhance those gains or not, but the decision will be based on you as your leadership takes this organisation forward. So thank you for the opportunity, and I look forward to seeing this organisation continue the good work that we've been doing over the last couple of decades.
Thank you. And if I'll just follow on to that before I open up the Chief Executive's report for questions or comment. In my Chair's report I noted, and Mr Buddy has covered most if not all of them, and the establishment of emergency management at Otago, a significant amount of work to pull that all together and gain the confidence of the TLAs that the more efficient way to deliver emergency management services was by one coordinated organisation, and it should be based at the Regional Council. I also look at harbour mastering responsibilities, and we're just in the position, I think the new staff members started this week or the week before. Yep. And it's taken a while, but we've eventually fronted up to our responsibilities there. And the development of bylaws and the likes, and we'll move on as a result. I'd also like to acknowledge the focus on health and safety. Yes, there was a change in the legislation, but and we had from the starting point had a pretty good position. The report told us in our review as an organisation, but just the leadership that Mr Vodik has shown there and how that's evolved and flowed down through the organisation, and is it more now than just health and safety, and appointment of a new director, and a much wider program around staff and staff management and the whole employment package. And the other one, as Mr Bodie has pointed out, is the Environmental Enhancement Fund. We had a fund years ago now, and it was withdrawn for a number of years, and we've had a fresh look at it, looked at the criteria, it is starting to deliver, and it'll be interesting to hear the feedback in the presentation later today. So I just want to extend our thanks for the 5 years and the passion and energy that you've put into our organisation on behalf of the region. Councillor Robertson.
Yep, I wanted to thank Mr Bodica very much as well. Reflecting back the pride that you just spoke about in the organisation, and reiterate the pride that we feel as well as a governance team in the organisation collectively, in the staff team. We're in a very good health, and you'll get a lot to do with that, so thank you very much. Also for providing the right environment for a collective strategic vision and planning. I think we're in good health there as well. We've got a very good strategic vision and look forward to taking that forward. So just want to thank you.
Councillor Scott.
Yeah, look, just to thank Peter for the hard work that he's put in, and I think you've talked about, you know, the different successes, but thank you very much, Peter.
Yes, thanks, Mr Chairman, and thank you, Peter, for your report, and thank you for the 5 years, which you have made significant changes to the organisation, and I'm sure the public would agree that it's a much more approachable organisation than it has been in the past, and that's not a criticism of the past, it's just a different organisation. And I particularly congratulate you on the staff culture change. It has been significant. The staff appears to me, under your leadership, to have been a very happy and united staff. So I wish you all the best, and thank you for the past 5 years.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to totally endorse everything you've said in your report, Peter. One thing that rang a bell with me was about river management, how we changed the culture there. I know I had a huge number of frustrations prior to that change. People wanted to shift a bit of gravel around in the river, and we basically had a hands-off approach. That was their policy. That's okay, but it did create enormous frustration. So that was one thing that was really important to me. We changed. Also, I would like to endorse the fact we do have a lot better relationships with all our stakeholders now, and I think yesterday was a good example of that. Okay, we were there to do some work on a particular topic, but I think the fact we meet with our stakeholders and have been doing quite regularly is very important, and it's so much better. And also, you talked about the culture within this organisation. Well, I've got to say that in the 19 years I've been on this council, it has never, ever been better, without a shadow of doubt. So thank you very much, Peter, and all the best for the future.
Andrew.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, just want to acknowledge Peter's Chief Executive's contribution across the region in many facets of the delivery in this for this organisation. For me, looking in from the outside for the last 4 years and now just been here 12 months and like others, noticed a significant change, and it's noticeable not only here, but to give you an example, yesterday unsolicited comments about the organisation, and I think Peter has got to take the majority of credit for that, so well done.
Peter, I'd just like to thank you on behalf of the communities of my region, part of the region, for your hard work over the last 5 years, and I wish you well for your future.
Councillor Lord.
Peter, and thank you. Just in particular, I haven't been here very long, but the work that you did with the Upper Clutha Water Group was greatly appreciated, and I know that you put a huge amount of time and effort into helping to facilitate the relationship with the Ministry for the Environment, and so on behalf of that group, thank you. It will not go unnoticed, so cheers.
Councillor Kimber.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Peter, we've heard a good deal about the operational milestones, if you like, that have been achieved under your on your watch. From my point of view, I just want to thank you very much for your personal relationship with me. I think that I've always been able to walk into your office and sit down and have a chat, and occasionally debate about things. That's been good. And also for the support that I've received in my areas of responsibility, I've appreciated that. I don't doubt that there are new opportunities out there for you, no question about that, and I wish you well as you pursue them. Thank you very much.
Councillor Hope.
Thank you. Thank you to our CEO, Colin Allwood. I think it's been great that you have introduced the culture where you listen and listen and say, how can I help you? And yesterday, through the forum we had, I had a very respected gentleman whisper in my ear saying, what a cracking culture there is in the ORC. You're a lucky girl. He did whisper that to me, so. So I'd like to thank you, and I wish you well
for the meeting. All right, I'm happy to move that the Chairperson's and Chief Executive's reports are noted.
Second that.
Councillor Lawton. No further discussion. I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
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 Against, carried. Thank you. All right, on to item 11 under matters for Council decision, 11.1. And Mr. Donnelly, we have some processes to work through in the middle of the trinium around, and this one's around the potential for Maori constituencies. Can you introduce the paper for us, please?
Yeah, through the chair. The paper outlines the options around around creation of Maori constituencies on the basis of the number of registered voters. At most, this council could have one Maori seat if it so chose to. The options that are outlined there, though, the recommendation is that council decides not to establish a Maori constituency, which is the status quo. We have gone through a process of talking to the local Runanga. We've had one formal response. The others have indicated that they wouldn't be, or it would be very unlikely that they would be seeking to establish Maori constituencies. The timeline for this is such that if council was to decide on one of the other options, it needs to be made before that decision needs to be resolved before the 23rd of November to fit the timelines for public notification and allow for a poll to be held if people requested it. And the 23rd of November cut-off allows for it then to meet the timelines to be included in the next election. But as I pointed out, the recommendation from staff is that the status quo stays and we don't establish a Maori constituency.
Yep. Thank you. Councillor Neil.
Oh, I'm happy to move the recommendation, Mr Chairman, and the paper's very self-explanatory. Otaka Renaka has already replied that they do not seek a Maori seat, and I'm prepared to accept the staff's stance on the fact that the other Renaka are likely to follow the lead of Otaku, and so I therefore move the recommendation.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Second by Councillor Brown. Councillor Laws.
I'm pretty uneasy about this for a number of reasons. I'm not opposed to the motion at all, but the whole aegis of the Local Government Act is to engage with Māori in the political system, and it seems that we are paying lip service to that. We'll pass this motion and we'll move on. We have a responsibility, as I said, under the Local Government Act. I realise that the demand is not so great from our Māori constituents as it might be in the North Island, where Māori are more numerous and more involved in the political process in general. And it's no surprise that local iwi do not want a Māori seat, but that's been the view of many local Māori or iwi throughout New Zealand, because they do not wish to diminish their own power or influence, and that they believe that allowing a democratic choice for Māori would actually militate against that influence and their own say in political matters, which seems slightly counterproductive to me and anti-democratic, but there you go. I think the OIC needs to engage much more from a group who are increasingly disenfranchised from local government. We know that Māori don't vote in local government. In fact, we think that around 3 or maybe 4 out of 5 Māori constituents don't vote at all for local government. And I'd hate to think that this is it. We have a responsibility under the Act to all Māori constituents, not just to local iwi or the local Runanga group. And we need to do a bit more work on this issue to engage Māori in what the ORC are doing. And certainly in entering the political process. So if we pass this motion today, I'd just like to flag that the ORC needs to put its thinking cap on as to how to engage Māori much more in the process of which we are a part. And I am concerned that if we pass this motion, we'll just carry on. So I do want to flag it, and I'd like to ask you, Stephen, if at some stage we can, particularly during the local, the long-term planning process, find a way in which we might be able to activate those groups that currently either feel disenfranchised or are from the political system that represents us. So I'm just flagging that issue now, because I would not like today to be the end of it.
All right. I'd like those comments. Councillor Scott, you have to look.
Yeah, I mean, it's, it's well since I read the report, some of the details were a bit sketchy, but there's so many question marks in my mind in terms of, you know, like we've spoken to, you know, one Runanga, and they've come back, and we've
spoken to all four Runanga, and we've had one formal reply.
Okay, apologies. But one's come back. I'm just hard to have a conversation with a group unless you're getting some feedback.
True.
It seems to me, and we've had feedback from one, and I'm wondering why they don't want to have a Maori constituency. I'm interested to know, is that, I mean, can who is eligible to stand in a Maori constituency, and how does that process actually work? Is there a danger, in fact, that the person that's successful isn't from the local iwi?
Yep, that's right. Mr. Donnelly, who's eligible? It's anybody on the Maori electoral roll.
That's correct.
Yep. Yeah, that's my understanding.
Yeah.
So, you know, is the reason that there's no Maori constituency because, in fact, the local iwi are concerned that there's a potential dilution of power? I just don't know. Like, I'm being asked to put my hand in the air in relation to a particular recommendation, and this report doesn't actually help me in that process. As a matter of interest, if we do pass this recommendation and the other three come back and say no, they'd like an American constituency, I know the report says that it's not too late, we can still conduct a poll. Is that even with this, by passing this recommendation, we're putting ourselves completely in their hands? Should we be communicating to other iwi in this region to get possibly a more balanced view?
No.
That is the decision, but we're putting ourselves in the hands of the local Runanga feedback to determine whether we go to that step. And what I'm trying to say is, you know, should we have in fact not only been consulting with them, but consulting with others to get a feel, a better feel? And that's just an innocent question. The report's put in front of me, I'm asking the question.
Yeah. So the four Runanga are our key relationship, but that is with Ngāi Tahu.
Yeah.
There are the wider other members of the Maori community that we do work with on other occasions, and picking up Councillor Law's point, like for a long-term plan, that would be an ideal opportunity. And they have been involved, I just can't remember the specific topic at the time, but they have been involved over the years and other processes, planning processes with the Regional Council.
Because, like, we do keep ourselves, you know, like you said before, you know, it was an honour to speak at, you know, the situation at the Early Settlers Museum, and certainly the feedback we get is always very positive, and I'm not questioning that.
Yep.
But as a councillor, that's certainly the only interaction that I really see and feel. And maybe that's a shortcoming in terms of my councillor input, I'm not sure, but so it's a difficult question, you know, like we've been asked to give a mature response to a situation that could be sort of percolating away. I'm not sure.
Councillor Brad?
Mr. Chairman, I just think we need to be aware that this is just sort of not a one-off situation. We've had a history of looking at this.
Yeah.
And basically in the past, or going back some time ago, we did have two iwi representatives on this council. I think it was one Gail Tipper and someone from the Matara Runanga.
Pointed to one of them.
And it didn't work particularly well. And since then, I know we've had regular consultation over the years as to you know, whether they want to be involved in this council. And generally, there's been negative. So I don't think there's a big issue here. I think there's still the opportunity for them to come back to us and say we're not happy in that, but I've seen nothing at this stage where we should change from the status quo.
Thank you, Doug. Apologies, Councillor Lawton.
Thank you. Two key points on that. In terms of the report, I don't feel that there was enough information in there. It would have been really interesting to know, for example, how many people there are in the Otago region that are on the Māori electoral roll, which would have given us a better sort of understanding of what we're dealing with. So that would have been helpful. I totally support Councillor Law's perspective of it is an opportunity for us to take a step back and have a look at what our required role is in this. I mean, I'm always quite surprised if we meet with our colleagues up in the North Island, for example. Our relationship with iwi is very unique in that we only are dealing with one, really, and obviously the various Brunanga under Ngāi Tahu. So it could be a good opportunity to step back and actually even all of the councils across the that deal with Ngāi Tahu to have a conversation with Ngāi Tahu about what they think that could be done there, but also the broader involvement with Māori constituents in the South Island and what our role is in terms of that as well. So, and finally, so I'd support that happening going forward, and as well as I think that I still have a conversation with a lot of people across Otago that say, what do ORC do? So it's not just about involving Māori in the elections and having a voice, but actually showing people who Otago Regional Council are as well. So I think Ms Southern and her team have some great opportunities there to continue to work on that. Anna.
Mr Dolly, you want to comment?
I was just going to say, from the number, there's roughly, and this is just at the top maybe, but there's around about 9,000 voters registered on the Māori roll. To give you an idea, that then is, we roughly work on one elected member per around about sort of 18,000, 19,000. So the number there I think it just creeps over, 0.5, so you could justify having, as I said, one seat, but it's always right around that margin of 0.5 where it would be under or over, depending on what final numbers are.
Councillor Moon.
I'm comfortable with the recommendation, and for a couple of reasons. One, I think as elected members around this table, we have a responsibility to stay connected with whether it's stakeholders as a group, individual constituents, and I see that as Māori have indicated at this point they're comfortable with the arrangement. I also see that because we're not getting feedback from them, from the Māori community, whether it's Ōtahu or Māori in general, I would suggest that staff relationships with staff who are working for local iwi those relationships must be working well, because if I take yesterday for example, the biodiversity strategy, we've got to focus on connecting with Māori in terms of objectives and principles and accepting that we're using development of policy and those relationships, building those relationships with local Māori at the front end when we're doing thinking about policy, not when we go out to consult. So I think that reflects good relationships that we've got currently.
Yes.
With the, whether it's at KTKO, now just been rebranded, but here with their own staff. So I think that reflects a healthy relationship, so that's why I'm comfortable with the status quo.
Yeah.
Can I answer, Ella's question?
Yes,
according to the census, there are 14,300 Māori living in the Otago region from 2013. So that 9 seems very high to me.
Like I said, it was off the top of my head. I've seen, I thought it was
around
8 or 9,000.
Exactly. So that's why I'm saying there are 14,000 Māori, so that's of all age groups. So that's why I'm saying it's disproportionate. Anyhow, Can I then flag, can I foreshadow a motion that, that this resolution is passed that the Otago Regional Council look at improving Māori participation in our processes?
Look at options for improving Māori participation in our processes?
Sure. Options, that's fine.
That's fine?
Yep. That this resolution is passed.
Right, so we can... any further comment?
Well, I'll just exercise my right of written. Can I move the motion?
Yes.
And I'm a bit surprised that this has created so much debate. In my
start thinking
my
head.
In my decade here, I felt our relationship with Mary has been very good and very interactive. And to some extent I've found some of the comments around the table almost patronising, but we want to second guess what you want. Well they've told us what they want. And in terms of engagement with Māori, well, you know, on pretty much all consents and all, Māori are there, they're working with council all the time. What we're actually... And council law is preempting motion, you know, that we have a better relationship to Māori. Well, of course we want a better relationship with Māori. We want a better relationship with the DLA. We want a better relationship with everybody. And of course we're going to work towards that. But I'm struggling to understand where that's actually coming from. So as I said, I'm surprised it's stirred up so much. Debate when to me it was all there in black and white, pretty straightforward, and now I'm just carrying on and making it go a bit longer as well.
So. Yeah, you're really stirring it up.
All right, the motion's been moved, Councillor Neil. It was seconded, wasn't it, Councillor Hope? And so that's receive the report and adopt option one and decide it is not necessary to establish a Māori constituency for the Otago region. I'll put that for a start off. All in favour, please say aye.
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 Again, carried. Thank you. Councillor Laws, you've got a second motion.
Just that the Otago Regional Council look at option towards improving Māori political, Māori participation in our political process. And can I just, in moving that, oh no, I'll need a second if that's right.
I'll second it.
Secondly, Councillor Laws.
Can I say an answer to Councillor Neil and not feeling all stirred up on this? Listen, the reality is that you just said, quote, they've told us what they want. Actually, they haven't. And that's my serious issue here, is that Māori are seriously disengaged from our political processes at the moment, and we can see that in the voting statistics. The fact that we go out even to the local runoma and ask four of them what they think, and only one of them bothers to reply, suggests that we've got a level of engagement issue, and that we should look at improving that level of engagement. That's all I'm suggesting.
Yeah. And I see that as an opportunity for outside the
exactly.
a hui for all Māori, for example, before we perhaps go public with our LTP. For example, it might be something that I'm sure staff will think on and work up. All right, it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion?
Yes. How on earth would you vote against that notion? I mean, goodness me.
Oh, you've got good. You've
got good. It's okay, Sam. It's okay. You don't have to do that. The point of Māori have their own system of politics. And that is the system that gave us the information that we were able to make the decision that we have just made. It would seem to me that there's a few white men want to run around and get in and change their system. They'll run their system the way they want to, and so be it. So, as I said, I can't vote against the motion, but of course we want better relationships with them.
Right, we might put the motion before somebody else
gets
up. Yeah, quick. We're going to be... Any further comments? All right, put the recommendation. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against?
No.
Carried. On to item 11.2, Local Government Leaders Water Declaration. This has been developed did it come out of the regional sector initially, Mr. Buddy? I think it did.
Yep, it was the RSG group.
RSG group started it, so it's been extrapolated or developed to a point where it's fit for purpose across the local government family. You'll see the declaration there, and you'll see that it's had significant support. In fact, we will be the last regional council to support it, I've been informed, purely from a timing perspective. It was still being amended at our 6 weeks ago at our previous meeting. I'm sure you will have had a read. Open it up for discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I'm quite happy we signed this, but in saying that, it basically states the obvious, and my way of thinking, like the last motion, it's quite PC, really. So I'm quite happy to vote for it.
There's no actions or anything in it, but it's just one of those things for actually we're taking this seriously and we're all in it together, and let's get on with it, sort of. Yeah. Councillor Scott?
If I was to be cheeky to Councillor Brown, it's like the previous motion, but you voted against the last motion, you voted for this one, but for that being just insane. But look, yeah, I mean, it doesn't do any harm to remind ourselves. I know that I actually read it twice, because at one point I started thinking, is this a local government sort of push in terms of infrastructure, in terms of drinking water? But after rereading it, you know that they are reaffirming water across the board, and it is a precious resource that needs to be valued, and it doesn't do any harm to remind ourselves of that. Yeah, thank you.
Councillor Kempton?
I'm very happy that you sign up, but I think we should need to keep in mind there's a dual purpose here. There's a purpose around alignment of local government, but there's also a big message for central government. Buried in here.
Yes.
So this is actually double barrel.
Yeah.
And it's saying to central government, you and we know there's a tidal wave of Three Waters infrastructure work to be undertaken. You should be thinking about it too. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and my apologies, I should have pointed that out.
Yeah.
Target audience was government and community. Mm.
Yeah.
Timing.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, I'm happy to move the recommendation that Council supports the Local Government Leaders' Water Declaration and authorise the Chairperson to add a signature to the declaration. Is there a seconder?
I will.
Councillor Hope. Any further discussion? I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. All right, 11.3. I trust you've read every line.
Did you see the typo on page 18?
Pardon?
Did you see the typo on page 18?
No.
Okay.
That's exciting.
I don't know which page it was, I was going to find it now.
Yeah. Who wants this one? Mr. Bodeker or Mr. Donnelly?
Pretty straightforward. We've had some amendments to the Resource Management Act. We have a schedule of delegations that are cascaded down from council to a committee for staff, and Ms. Weaver has done a great job in aligning those with the changes with the current delegation register to produce this report for adoption by council.
Thank you, and welcome, Marion. Open it up, colleague. Councillor Scott.
So is that the question? Are there any particular changes that we should be aware of?
The changes are underlined.
Yeah, I realise that. But right. Are there any key changes that we should be aware of?
Yes,
Mr. Chairman, probably the most significant change is that there has been an activity introduced to the Resource Management Act, which is called a deemed committed activity, where you've got an activity that would normally need a consent because it's just outside of our committed activity rules, but if it's close enough in terms of boundary issues or assess, we can deem it to be a committed activity. And the MSC has already warned us that we need to track these and so on. So
so that we don't have to go to council every time someone turns up with wanting to, a certificate to say that a very minor activity is a deemed committed activity, we can pass that delegation. The other thing is that the sections around notifying applications, how you make a notification, because have been rewritten. The series of sections in the Act have been replaced with new sections, so the delegations there have not changed a lot, but they've been altered slightly to reflect the changes that are in those sections. And then right at the end, and there's one part of the page that's right the other place, but there are new provisions in the Act for how we do judicial plan, which includes through a collaborative process or through a fast track process which goes straight to the environment court and leaves out any public participation. Now, it's not necessarily clear whether we would use any of those processes, but just in case at some stage we decide we will, there are necessary delegations for things like serving notices on people, generating reports, consulting with people, that kind of thing. All of the stuff that council has to do around regional plans is still in place in terms of having to come back before council to sign off and that sort of thing. So that sort of thing is not in the schedule. But anything where staff, well, where it's convenient for staff to send information to people or send out draft proposals or that kind of thing, that requires a delegation, so all of those are in there.
Thank you.
That's on page
28. Councillor Scott, that answers the question.
Yeah, no, that was good. Thank you.
Any other questions? Where was the typo, Councillor?
I can't find it now. It is somewhere, I thought, page 18, but I'll just email Marianne if this one.
You are having an assault, Ken.
Councillor Scott.
I thought 34A is quite significant, and that is the appointment of hearings commissioners and the requirement to consult with the relevant EWI authority on whether it's appropriate to appoint a commissioner with an understanding of keeping them alive. We will have to have processes that ensure that that happens, and presumably that will become part of the appointments committee. Kind of standard
process
as well.
Yes.
And that is significant in my view. But it also, of course, to some degree, follows on from what we've just been talking about, is that there we have, there's a statutory requirement to get in the process of doing this. Tangata Whenua are going to be probably significantly better informed about where things are going in the hearing space too. So I guess it's going to have an impact on our appointments.
It has potential to, particularly if time frames are short, which occasionally occur and we need to find a panel quickly. I'll just wait, Councillor. Well, Ms. Winter, are we able to, I have that section highlighted, are we able to develop a protocol with EWI around how we enact that particular part? In other words, if it was this topic, we don't need to know EWI, or the sort of operationalise it with our relationship so it's not necessarily every panel, or are we obliged with this change to the law? I wonder whether there's a working relationship we can develop and not overcomplicate it.
Just a subsequent question about that. If it's Tangata Whenua, and that doesn't necessarily mean kaha either. Yeah. So who do you consult?
So can we just clarify that, Marianne, please? It is only for plan changes?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, my apologies.
And Mr. Chair, the answer is yes, a protocol can be developed, because a protocol must be developed in terms of a system of when it's applicable, etc., etc., and that needs to be worked through.
Where's it say it's only for plan changes?
Mr. Chairman, when it refers to part 5 or part 1 or 5,
part one or five,
schedule 1 is the same process.
It is too. My apologies.
Through Mr. Chair, just to respond to Councillor Robertson, I would probably advise that Councillor put that request to iwi and ask them how they would appropriately respond to putting in a protocol.
Alright, any further discussion? The recommendation is on page...
Just want to flag one thing, sorry, my apologies. It's section 299 and section 305. It's to initiate an appeal to the High Court on a question of law.
Which page is
on
this?
Page
you will read all the screen.
And it's the second one, third one down.
And the question is?
There's a number of them. That should really be. I don't think the CE should have the delegated power for that. It's a law. That issue should come to the governance team. And your CE should be removed from those delegations going down that line. When you're getting into high courts and courts of appeal, questions of law, that's when the governance team should make that decision. And to have this ambivalence of awe, I seem wrong. So it should just be the
which ones exactly?
Oh,
were you?
The section 294.
Yep.
299, 301. So once you're starting to get your council involved in going down that whole list, once you're starting to get your council involved in litigation of this nature, that should automatically come here. Remember we had a bit of a scrap this year, just for those at the background, about what we would know in a mediation hearing and things like that, and how we could be briefed?
Yes, remember?
It's to do with the Lindis, I think. I think it's a general principle that we need to uphold as a governance team, that we need to be abreast of matters in which the ORC is involved in legal issues. Particularly off policy or litigation level.
So, just to be clear, your question 294 is 1, 2, 3, it's the top four.
No, I'm just saying that rather than or, it should be a decision of our council.
So, Mr. Bodie.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, responding to Councillor Law's comment about matters of law, most of what we do are covered by some legal process or other, whether it's our inspection, whether it's our enforcement, whether it's our policy development. This council has got to decide whether it wants to be embroiled in all aspects of this council's work, or whether it wants to confine itself to governance.
You know, my
discussion we had before was what we around the policy briefing. We've agreed on a process for that, and in terms of when we take legal action, again that policy's been agreed and that is implemented. But with our enforcement work, we take a lot of legal action from time to time, whether it be an abatement notice or whether it be notice of prosecution. So this council has to decide just how deep it wants to immerse itself within the organisation's operational activity.
Okay.
Yeah, but this is just about appeals to Environment Court or High Court.
Yeah. And it's just a summary of changes to the RMA, and it's reflecting those changes. It's not talking about our policies going forward on that.
Yeah. And
It's not a question of immersing ourselves in the detail, Peter. It's a question of when we get involved in litigation at this level, who makes that authority?
Yep.
And you see, I don't regard that as a detail issue. I regard that as a pretty important governance issue, particularly when it comes to issues like the Lindis or something like that. And there's an equivocation here. It's an either or. And that equivocation, I think, could lead to potential concern further on down the track. So I just want to make it clear that if we decide that we're going to go to the High Court, we endorse that as a governance team,
yeah,
or rather than as the leader to a chief executive, whoever that might be.
So, is it really, just wanted to clarify, Marion, might have a legal context.
Mr. Chairman, the delegation for this stuff is to a committee of counsel. The reason it's also to the CE is because of the timing. And you'll notice that any delegated action by the CE has to be reported back to the committee of counsel. And the timing thing is about a lot of appeals have 15 working days to be lodged, whereas council's meeting schedule does not necessarily fit in with that. So given that I think we've only been to the High Court once or twice in the time that I've been to being with the Regional Council, the practice has been that the CE would certainly canvass that in politician if a meeting was not in the time frame available to do something, so that it was lined up for the next council meeting or committee meeting when it was reported back. So the delegation is actually to a committee of council,
yeah,
or the CE if the actual time things don't fit with meeting schedules. Otherwise you have to call a special meeting,
yes,
of the committee or council,
yeah,
to do it.
Well, can I, in answer to that, there's two things. The first thing is that council calls special meetings all the time. Second is, you're right, it's a relatively rare event, but it's likely to become an actual fact as we move into this process, a little less rare. I think it's quite clear that there are some significant litigation issues over the next 5 years, particularly to do with the water plan and its various adjuncts.
And we may not necessarily be the appellant, though. There'll be other people appeal, and we are part of
that's
the process.
Right, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Mm. But the point that I'm making is that this understanding orders, we have the opportunity to Skype, to have meetings under Skype.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, that's not an argument, because we can have a meeting at the drop of the hat, basically. And I'm just saying that this is to remove that question mark as to either or. And it says this is our responsibility, we're the governance, before you start to get involved in that. And given that the answer just now was, well, wait on, it is a delegated authority to the committee, and it's only a question of timing that the CE happens to be there, well, then I argue that that's the end of that argument, then remove the all-CE, and we now have the technology to be able to convoke those meetings where some urgency required.
So it's actually only 299 and 305 and 308.
It's the big stuff.
Yeah, decision to initiate appeal to the High Court or the Court of Appeal. So it's only those two, which already has the relevant committee or council or GPZ. All right.
So I'm proposing to remove all CE from that delegation.
I think that's a reasonable request. We've talked about, it's been highlighted that those High Court situations have only happened maybe once before or whatever, and it certainly keeps us abreast of the important decisions. And it's not about getting immersed in the operations of it, it's about whether we want to go ahead and initiating an appeal. I think that's a reasonable request. I would support that request.
And that decision will be based on advice?
Oh, definitely.
How's everybody else feel?
Good. Mr. Councillor, are you seconding it?
I'm happy to second it. Any further discussion? Ms. Weaver or Ms. Winter, is there anything else from a process that's just the ability to make the decision in a timely manner is the key issue here? Yes.
Call for a division.
Righto. I'll put that.
Well, then could we be quite clear on the motion then, please?
Lauren, have you got the words?
I believe it's the decision to remove the delegation for section 299, 305 and 308. Do I get that correct?
Yes.
That's correct.
Yep.
Moved by seconded by
Councillor Scott.
Right.
All right.
So Mr. Chairman, are you amending the motion, which is to approve this? Yeah. What do you do?
Yes.
So this is an amendment to the motion?
Yes.
Or are you supporting the motion with those removed?
The other way.
The other way. I was going to take this first
yeah.
and then support the remaining delegations.
Yeah.
We'll pick up the following recommendation.
Yes.
Comfortable with that? All right. Division's been called for. Lauren, please.
Councillor Bell.
Yeah, four.
Sorry, Councillor Buck?
Yep.
Four. Right. Yep. Sorry, I didn't hear you.
Councillor Brown.
Four.
Councillor Hope.
Four.
Councillor Henson.
Four.
Councillor Four. Councillor
O'Neill. Against.
Councillor Noon.
Against.
Councillor Robertson.
Against.
Councillor Williams.
Again.
Am I allowed to squeak?
I think they assumed our vote.
I wouldn't assume it.
No.
I have changed it before.
Yeah, you need to record the vote. Right. Sorry, yeah.
Four.
You did tell you haven't asked me. Four.
Given for the motion and for against the motion.
The motion is passed. Thank you. All right, we'll move on to the council approved the above schedule of delegations. Subject to the changes made in previous recommendation or words to that effect.
So moved.
Moved, Councillor Laws. There's a second up. Councillor Noon. No further discussion. I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against. Carried. Thank you. All right. Matters for noting. I don't think there are any. On to reports back from councillors. Are there any? Councillor Kempton.
Just very briefly, we'll receive the minutes and there's no discussion around that. Regional Transport Committee, combined Regional Transport Committee meeting last week. Just to give you a little bit of prior notice of how the plan is shaping up. There are a couple of suites of projects that are being prioritised rather than individual projects themselves emerging in the plan, and of course there's a suite of projects around Queenstown which look like they're prioritised as a project, if you
like.
The other one that's emerging is three very substantial projects around mode shift, around safety, and so on, in Dunedin, which have been hanging around for for quite a long time, and you know, sort of like some work done in those areas by pushing along the cycle, the rebuilding cycle, and so on.
Yep.
And so there's a tendency now to say, well, all of these things actually have objectives are very, very closely intertwined, and one without the other doesn't make a lot of sense. So it's just a little bit of a shift in the way that that plan may well come forth. And the other thing is, any number is too many. I was asked by staff, and everybody was asked by staff, to mention the little campaign which is starting around shifting, it's by the Road Safety Influencing Group, which comes out of the committee, and it's around shifting conversations at a public bar in Wittlemarch Hotel or wherever around road safety. And so if anybody would like to stick a little sticker on their car, so people think, what on earth is that? Right? And then the as it emerges, and it's going to emerge, now whether this is good marketing, bad marketing, or I don't know, but it's different is all I'm saying, is that as it emerges, there was a term which Councillor Lawton and I shared yesterday, which was cognitive dissonance is what this is about. And what that means is that you do sit in the public bar of the Middlemarch Hotel and you say, yeah, that speeding's really bad, and gee, it's not a good idea to drink too much before I drive home. Then you're about to have another beer. And that stops you having had a conversation. So
the general cognitive, whatever it was.
Cognitive dissonance. I'm sure Councillor Lawton could explain it much better than me. Anyway, very different campaign, and you'll actually see it starting to emerge a little bit. From your point of view, I would ask you to have some conversations with people around behaviour on the road. Anybody at all, right? Whether it's your colleagues or people in other areas. So all I'm saying is just watch this space a little bit, so that's what those little stickers are, and I'm sure that the whole council fleet will have those stuck on them, will they, Peter?
I plan to, but
good answer.
Thank you anyway. That's all.
Enough trouble with For Our Future, but anyway.
Councillor Scott, I just have to say that I Councillor Kempton, an apology, because I was asked what does this mean, and I was told it was from Councillor Kempton, and I thought it must have been the number of defect poles in their community. So I apologise.
You can explain that over lunch to them. Councillor Lawton.
All right. Quick update. Thank you, Councillor Chair Woodhead, for summarising the various meetings that we've been to over the last month or so. So the Zone 6 and 7, the Lake Snow, Queenstown Public Transport and how we affect groundwater meetings, but also just wanted to add in terms of adding on to the Queenstown public transport discussion was also the airport turned up, and if anyone's interested in getting blown away by some numbers of our visitors to this region over the next 30 years, then take a look at that report, I'll send it round. So one of the questions in the report to the people that are interested, whether 5 million passengers per year by 2045 is a sustainable level of growth. So just highlighting that you know, this is some of the issues that we're dealing with on the other side of the region from here in Dunedin.
That's from a current base of 1.8.
Yep. So we need to keep that in the back of our minds. And it's a really interesting document just to get up to date with what's happening at the airport there. And the other one was the Guardians of Lake Hayes AGM, which I was invited to be the guest speaker at on Friday. Thank you to Mr. Palmer for his update on where they're at with the working through options for looking at remediation on Lake Hayes, and have a work program in place for that. So happy to also have any discussions with people to give an update on where that's at.
Sorry, was that the Guardians of Lake Hayes?
Yep. Yeah. Oh, Friends of Lake Hayes?
Friends of Lake Hayes. Yeah, no, you said, I thought I heard you say Guardians of Lake Hawea.
Oh, did I? Oh,
no.
Yep.
Yeah,
no?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, no, it was definitely Lake Hayes, sorry.
Right,
apologies.
No, that's
yeah, and their AGM.
Yeah, good.
Can I ask you a question?
and it's sort of relevant to you on the issue there. I didn't go to the meeting on Thursday, but I went. You went to the meeting on the Friday, both of you, for the Queensland Lakes District Council.
Queensland Lakes.
To do with, sorry. The transport issue.
Yes.
The $2 bus, which you announced, both of you. There's no plan B if it doesn't work, is there?
So,
we're talking about that number, so just...
There is a substantial work plan going forward over the next 30 years in terms of that Waitakere transport strategy. This is the first step in a whole range of initiatives having to work between the various groups of the Queenstown Lakes District Council, ORC and NZCA, and the airport actually. In terms of just the bus, it's going to be up to that community to make it work. I think there's a massive role that this council, and I'm not totally clear to tell the truth, around this council and who is taking the lead with the Queensland Lakes District Council around a behaviour change campaign.
Yeah.
We need to be onto that. The launch is on the 20th of November in Queenstown. It'd be great if we could all go and ride a bus in Queenstown. We get a free bus card when we're there. There is only one launch. And there was a lot of discussion from the community at the meeting in the Franklin Primary School hall. There is a lot of skepticism about whether or not people are going to take it up. But it's a clear message that it's up to them to make that happen. So no, there's not a plan B, I guess, but it is an acknowledgement that it's the first of many initiatives.
Yes. So I'll come to that in a minute, and the name's not Plan B, it's how the public transport system will evolve in the Queensland Lakes District. But Ms. Sutton, are you able to comment around the launch and the media and your ongoing behavioural change focus from a communication perspective, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So we're working with a local company called Scope Media, and over the last week I've had an opportunity to look at all of the key messaging and look at the content that's being created. We've been very mindful to make sure that the content's very Queenstown oriented, so it's quite daily and it's actually quite funny. It quotes a lot of fun at taking cars. Obviously it's a behaviour change campaign, so it's going to be a long-term campaign, but to add some confidence, we have an amazing local agency working on it and they're doing the best possible work that they can do. It is dependent on people to take that transport option, and reliance on cars takes a long time to reduce. So we will be doing ongoing campaigning in response to the route query. We are taking all the feedback on board and we're keeping a log of that feedback, and it's going to be very much adaptable and changing to demand as it gets rolled out. The launch is the 20th of November, and we all would have received the formal invitation this week. Yep. Happy to run you through the details if required at some point on the running sheet for the day. It's going to be a public event in the village green, and weather permitting, it should be quite a festive environment, and there will be a bus. And
probably more than one bus.
There will be a bus that arrives, and Stephen will be on that bus. But post the event, there'll be an opportunity for VIPs and councillors to hop on that bus and do a celebratory lap.
See if the Wi-Fi works.
On board, so, no, do not.
So I'll come to you in a moment, Councillor Kempton, and right. I might just make a couple of comments and you'll be able to fill in some gaps for me. But so 2 weeks ago at committees we approved the integrated business case for the Waikatipu Basin. In fact it was for Queensland Lakes, because I think it had Wanakaroo too yesterday. And that's the ongoing work program for the staff group and the governance group that Councillor Kempton and Mr. Buddick and I are part of. We've been very clear in the public meetings, Councillor Lawton and Mr. Collins has, that public transport in Waikatipu will be looking different in 5 years' time to what it was going to be on November the 20th. In other words, it's going to evolve. For example, frequencies, timetables, direct links and things might need to be introduced or amended as demand starts to flow from certain areas as the communities change up there, because it is growing and changing very rapidly. And our current financial year, Mr. Donnelly, I think I'm correct, there is a block of work around a feasibility study on ferries, I think feasibility study is the right word, mm-hmm. on the lake, that ORC is undertaking. So communities such as Kelvin Heights, but and even maybe from the airport longer term, but certainly around Jack's Point and the like, you know, they might be able to be serviced by ferries as well as buses in the shorter term rather than the medium term. So that study's in the and the strategic, the integrated business case, Councillor Kempton is looking well into the future, and you know, there are conversations on other mass movement mechanisms that and those conversations are occurring at every governance group meeting.
Just a couple of things just to round that out. At the governance group meeting, there was some discussion about reporting of results from the $2 bus. I think we've got that at a point where we cannot shorten up that reporting time too much, because the kind of thing that might happen is that people jump on buses and, having done that, realise that there's more space on the road and go back to the cars, realise they can't go back to buses. Instability. It'll take a long time for it to stabilise in terms of behaviours. And so it might be 6 months out before we get the first inkling of whether or not it's working on a continuous basis. Put that aside for the moment. The other point that I just wanted to cover was the question of forecasting, which you brought up, Councillor Lawton. That was brought into centre stage at the governance group meeting, and also at the regional transport committee meeting. We brought that up, we pulled it into centre stage on the basis that if the community responds to, as you would expect from a servicing perspective, responds to the estimated visitor numbers, the airport's estimated visitor numbers, that will be very different from if you just take the Department of Statistics numbers with respect to growth. And so there is, the growth projections are nowhere near settled, and we think that at the moment they're probably lower than where they should be.
They're probably lower than where they should be.
Yeah.
Okay, because that's the point, is that they've been underestimated for the Queensland Lakes area over and over again.
And I'm convinced they still are.
Okay, good.
But that's the conversations away in both of those environments.
Exactly, and there's some discrepancy between the two numbers currently. Mm. All right, thank you, Councillor Lawton.
Just continue on a point that Councillor Kempton made. On day one, the buses will not be full, and they won't be full on day two either. And there'll be plenty of media that'll be very keen to actually say, look at the buses, they're empty. And I just hope that this council, individual councillors, as the council staff will just say that this is a big behavioural change. The buses aren't too big, because that's the other thing we often get. Why don't you have smaller buses, which is fine at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but they get full at five. You know, it is a long process, and you know, and there may be some teething troubles that we haven't thought of. There may be the odd bus driver a wee bit unsure. It was interesting when we changed our routes in the city earlier last month. You know, I followed a bus, and clearly the bus driver was a little bit confused as to whether he's going left or right, and that's understandable because he or she may well have been driving a previous route. So we will get the teething troubles, and I just hope that the councillors and as the staff will actually support it, because it's we'll get plenty of naysayers.
Yeah, and the other point is that not all the infrastructure is in place from day one to assist. So there'll be some roading changes over time where there'll be bus access and bus priorities given, but in some cases they're waiting on other larger roading projects to be put in place, such as a new roundabout at the Fenton corner. So there's a range of things that will occur over time, but it's certainly a dynamic situation and it will evolve, and we are well aware of that. This is not the end game.
Yeah.
No, but can I just very quickly in commenting and in response a little to Peter as well. I attended the Frampton meeting with colleagues, and Ella's right, there were about 100 people there, and it was a lot more numerous and a lot more vocal than I think we all expected it to be. Or maybe you did, but it was interesting.
That's good.
One of the things that I was concerned about, and it's no criticism of Gerald Collins at all, Gerald, is that he was constantly saying, listen, it won't be perfect. There will be teething issues, and so on and so on and so on. The best way to kill something is to make sure there are. I want to flag with you that it better be perfect, because the best, you're only going to get one shot at this, as any communications professional will tell you. Your shot is when you let it go, and if you're going to end up with buses being missed or not arriving on the day, or things like that, those negative headlines will be the first headlines attending the launch of the service, and they will create impressions in the community. So I would like some degree of assurance that, yeah, actually it's going to be really good. And we are going to make sure that there aren't teething problems, because I'm assuming that you would have worked out what those teething problems are, and that you've got an answer for them so that they are kept to the barest minimum.
So yeah, it is going to be very good, because it's going to be an enhanced service, but part of an enhanced service with greater frequency is more buses on the road. And at times of congestion, and keeping to timetables will be a challenge, and because it could be, it'll be part of the traffic on the road with the cars travelling in and out of Queenstown, for example.
But, not turning up at all.
Yeah. Ms. Sutton, anything else you wish to add there?
Through the chair, I don't think that I could really comment on the operations of the buses, but we have looked at every scenario. We are anticipating that there's bound to be something that happens, and the only confidence I can give you is that we're ready. We've got agreements in place with the local agency to manage all of our social media sites. We've got key messages, FAQs, looking at every scenario. So we'll be able to respond, but I can't guarantee the operations will be...
No, I wasn't asking you to, sorry.
Yeah. Well, have we got enough staff? For example, one of the things I've still seen the advertising as of this week is for further bus staff in the Queenstown area.
Oh, drivers.
Yeah,
drivers. That's an operational issue for the contractor. I mean, you've got to remember that this whole service has been brought forward. It wasn't planned for this to actually occur until into the next LTP. So, you know, we've responded to a huge amount of pressure and demand from the community, and we've actually brought this together. And yeah, we're under a huge amount of time pressure. And if you were to say now, oh, it's got to be perfect, well, if that was the case, we should have said, it's not going to happen this year. We'll leave it as we've programmed it in the next LTP. And it'll be 18 months or 2 years away. So, you know, there's a trade-off. And staff have done a huge amount of work to get everything organised. And even the time constraints for actually doing the network review and then tendering, yep, has put our staff, and to be fair, probably Richie's, under a lot of pressure to fulfil that as the contractor and get the necessary staff. They are doing everything they can. They're lining up drivers from, you know, from Dunedin, Invercargill, from the North Island, and that will actually cost them. So a huge amount is being done. I think all that Mr. Collins is pointing out is that even with us looking at everything in best endeavours, you know, with the time frames that we've got, will it be 100%? You know, will there be a bus that runs late? There could be. So that's to be expected.
Yeah.
But it'll be a vastly improved service. And it's with things like $2 fares, we're running it in the first week for free. So, you know, there's a huge amount of positives there that should get people on board and using it.
And overall, you were there at the end of the Frampton meeting. You know, there was Councillor Lawton, there was quite a bit of positive comment from them, all our meetings, really.
Yeah.
In fact, they were welcoming it.
Mm. Yeah.
And I found it quite interesting that in the Frampton meeting, one lady said her husband wasn't going to get on the bus and sit beside a high school student, and my mother said that her high school student wasn't going to get on the bus and sit beside an adult. But anyway, first world problems. people personalise it down to that level, that's fine, but I'm sure over time we'll see a significant change in the Waikato. And just to pick up Mr. Goldie's point, there's been a huge effort at staff level on a number of fronts, and there certainly is a communication front too.
Yeah, through the chair, may I make one kind of comment? What I've observed from the project is that there's a lot of collaboration at that local level and a lot of goodwill.
Yes.
We're getting emails weekly, daily from different groups within the Queenstown community who are circulating the information through their networks, and we're working closely with the local council. And I think it's a great collaboration. We can rely on understanding that there will be teething problems, but we're in this together.
Yeah.
And I'm
right.
Seeing that.
Good. Thank you. All right. Any other councillor feedback? No?
I'm sure I'm actually busy, but could I ask something here? No, it's just the Otago Farm balance rules have come up, and the ladies just emailed me and said, look, well, do I have to do it, or...
We can follow that up later.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Nobody else? That's good. We'll move on to recommendations from the committee meeting, starting with the recommendations of the policy committee.
Yep.
Councillor Robertson.
Recommendation.
Moved. Seconded. Councillor Scott. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against. Carried. Recommendations of the Regulatory Committee.
Moved.
Councillor Scott. Seconded. Councillor Neil. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against. Carried. Thank you. Recommendations of the Communications Committee. Councillor Hope. Seconded. Councillor Kempton. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against. Carried. Thank you. Recommendations of the Technical Committee.
Moved.
Councillor Noon.
Seconded.
Councillor Lawton. Thank you. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against. Carried. Recommendations of the public portion of Finance and Corp. Councillor Brown, are you happy to move those?
No, I wasn't there. I moved.
Good point. Councillor Noon. I'm happy to second those. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against. Carried. Thank you. All right, we're a wee bit early, and
non-public section of the public health.
Sorry, are they on the agenda?
Oh, sorry, it was recommendations from audit and risk.
There was no recommendation.
There was no recommendation.
Oh, sorry, it was just for noting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes,
Mr. Chair, we could have a cup of tea.
Well, we'll just consult Mr. Buddy for a minute. So we've got lunch for 12:30, Lauren? Yes, and we have continuation of council meeting with two report backs, firstly from the Manurewa Catchment Water Strategy Group and then the Otago Peninsula Biodiversity Group, to occur at 1 o'clock. So we'll adjourn the meeting at this point, can we fill a bit of time in with are we able to pull a workshop forward? I've got one matter I can cover off, which is ability of councillors to attend some upcoming consultation meetings.
I'll send my staff already, Mr. Chair, for the closer.
We could put that in before lunch.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Half an hour, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
What about Robin Shah? She's not
here. Right. So we'll do that, but I'll just give me a minute to find my... So we stand adjourned. And...